Welcome to Season 3 of the Guardians of Hope podcast. We are a community of parents, educators, health, legal, and tech experts dedicated to positively impacting children's lives. The thoughts and opinions of my guests are not my own. This is a platform for sharing. Welcome, everyone. Today, we are diving into a topic that is often overlooked in special education conversations: the critical role of maturity in a child's progress. Many parents and educators focus on academic accommodations, IEP goals, and therapeutic interventions, but understanding a child's emotional and development maturity can be the missing piece in helping them truly thrive. I'm honored to be joined by Tracy and Lena, founders of Healing Children LLC. Tracy is a licensed professional counselor and elementary school counselor, and Lena is a nationally certified school psychologist with extensive expertise in how trauma, entitlement, and life experiences impact the brain and child development. Their unique approach focuses on understanding the why behind behavior and creating healing environments that lead to genuine, lasting progress for children. Tracy, Lena, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. We're super excited. It's a topic that we love to talk about.
Same here. Thank you so much. So why don't we go ahead and get started by telling us about your background and how you both founded Healing Children.
Yeah, so I've been a school counselor since 1999. And Lena's been a school psych the same amount of time. We started working at the same school in 2001. And at that time, I was actually looking at getting out of education because I just wasn't seeing the accountability with behavior. And working with juvenile justice prior to being a school counselor, I knew if we didn't have accountability, we weren't going to see kids grow up the way they needed to, and it was going to affect their mental health. And Lena, interestingly, was feeling the same way. As we were working at the same school, kind of learning about each other and our philosophies, realizing we're on the same page. And so we dedicated our time studying trauma, attachment,
entitlement,
the brain,
development,
and started using different strategies. And we were seeing growth in the kids. And then people were asking us to come in and train and help them. And we thought, shoot, why don't we make this a business? and then we can do this all over the place. And so it just really was a passion because we went into education really expecting to see growth in kids. And when you're not, it's just disheartening and discouraging, and you want to do something else. And so luckily we found each other and we stayed in it and found a lot of success. And so that's Healing Children got started. We became an LLC in 2012, and then we started presenting in 2013.
Very good story. I'd love to hear that, and so nice to have you both on to talk about this. The first thing I want to address is when we talk about maturity in the context of special education, what exactly do we mean? How is developmental or emotional maturity different from chronological age? And why does the distinction matter so much for children with special needs?
And really, it kind of matters for all kids in addition to kids with special needs. So when we're looking at maturity, Tracy and I, we look at a few different things. We look at Eric Erickson's philosophy of maturity, he has different stages.
It's like the social
stages of development that looks at how do we mature and grow? So like, you know, birth to, you know, one, they're looking at trust versus mistrust. Like if I learn that the world is safe, then everything's okay. Then I move to the next stage of maturity. And then we would look at autonomy versus shame and doubt, which is the toddler years. I'm learning how to be a little bit more autonomous. I'm learning to follow directions. And so really we look at the whole gamut of children from birth. And because we work with kids through high school.
Well, with Eric Erickson too, his stages, even though it was developed a long time ago, and there are some things that might be a little bit different because our course for society is different, it hasn't been debunked yet, even though it's been studied over and over again. And so he's really looking at, you have to learn a skill before you can move on to the next phase of maturity.
Yeah.
And so that we use that a lot to help us understand where kids might be at.
And so we also look at Foster Kline's stages of conscious development, which looks at how our conscious is developed too. So when we're looking at kids, when we're looking at maturity, especially in line with kids with special education or special needs, there's a few skills that really show us, like, are we maturing? Are we growing? So as we mature, we go from being an infant who we cry to get our needs met. Mm-hmm. We have to rely on other people to meet all of our needs, to we're slowly learning how to meet our own needs. And we're learning how to handle frustration, because frustration tolerance is a huge developmental stage. We're learning that, learning new things. We feel frustrated. How can we manage that frustration? We work through it to continue learning, which is a huge thing for kids, especially kids who have disabilities, because learning is hard.
Yeah.
And they have to learn, how do I manage those feelings of frustration? They're learning delayed gratification, that I don't always get what I want when I want it.
Mm-hmm.
They're learning how to handle no. They're learning to follow rules. They're learning to follow directions. And all of that's maturity. And as we mature, we gain confidence. And so what we're wanting for all of our kids, especially kids with special needs, is we want them to gain confidence in knowing, what are my strengths and my weaknesses?
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are the things I'm good at. These are the things I struggle with. And as kids mature and they have confidence, they're able to say, you know what? I have a hard time reading.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to hide it. I don't have to throw a fit to make sure people don't know that I have a hard time reading. I can be honest about that. And then I can ask for the help and the supports that I need to overcome that.
Mm-hmm.
And what we want for all of our kids, regardless of their disability, we want them to be going through that maturity growth, because the more mature they are, the better they're going to be able to handle the disabilities that they struggle with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just such an important piece to mental health, because kids who are struggling with a maturity issue are not developing that confidence that we all want them to have. And that they are going to need as they prepare for things like junior high and high school. And then, of course, the world of work as an adult, and making sure they're meeting those milestones to get them prepared for what's ahead of them.
Yeah. And so the question about chronological age that you asked, we all are going to be growing in chronological age, regardless of whether we're maturing or not maturing.
Emotionally maturing. Yeah.
And there might be some maturity that might happen naturally with just aging, but it's usually through experiences. It's usually through consistent accountability, cause and effect thinking, having a good caregiver, those role models. Those are all things that help us mature. And so, for example, in our job, often what I see is I might see a kid who is maybe chronologically 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And at 10 years old, we expect you to be able to start and finish tasks, like you have initiation. That's one mm-hmm. of Eric Erickson's stages. You can start and finish tasks. You trust adults to take care of you. You follow directions. You're learning to share, take turns with your peers, mm-hmm. get along with your peers. That's kind of what we expect for 10-year-olds. If they don't have that maturity, what sometimes I see with maybe a 10-year-old is maybe they're still at that 2 to 3-year-old developmental stage. Mm-hmm. So maybe their frustration tolerance is poor. They throw a fit when they're asked to do something hard. They don't think that they should have to do anything hard.
Mm-hmm.
I even had one just the other day. He said, well, you're asking me to do stuff and it's ticking me off and I shouldn't have to do that. Well, that's something that you might hear more with the 2 or 3-year-old. Usually by the time they're 10, they're mature enough to understand we're going to be asked to do stuff we don't want to do.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to be expected to do it.
And so that, I don't know if that answers your question about the difference between chronological age versus maturity.
It does. And we'll go into it a little more, because we're talking specifically about children with special needs. But as mm-hmm. you mentioned, this applies to everyone. But I want to address the support that children with special needs get in the school system mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. maturity. So many parents receive either an IEP or a 504 plan and expect to see the academic results around that or the progress. But maturity plays a crucial role in whether these interventions actually work. So can you explain how a child's maturity level actually impacts their ability to benefit from these services to begin with?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I see this all the time, because I work. So my world is special ed. And so I'm in that world a lot. And if I have a child, maybe they have a reading disability or they have a math disability. The kids who are really mature, who have that good frustration tolerance, they have delayed gratification. They have that confidence in that, and understanding that we all have strengths and weaknesses, and it's not something to be ashamed about. And you're able to have those conversations. Those kids, when you provide them the support that they need, maybe you provide them extra help in reading.
Mm-hmm.
you give them accommodations.
Maybe they have extra time.
Extra time. Or maybe for some of my kids, they learn how to use that technology around it. So maybe they have a reading pen that helps them read so that they can learn. Mm-hmm. They can still be reading like the history books, but their reading's not getting in the way. But because they have the maturity, they're going to access those tools, and then you're going to see learning and growth.
Okay.
What often happens with a lot of my kids, especially when they're initially in special education, mm-hmm. or if they've had some, they're not as mature. Even if I put all of those accommodations in place, the minute they feel frustrated, the minute it looks hard, we're having them, they're throwing temper tantrums, they're throwing fits. So I can put all the right things in place for them. I can put all the accommodations in place for them. I mean, us as a school team, but they're not going to access those accommodations because they're not mature enough to access those accommodations. So sometimes we have to take some steps back to provide them the support to help them have the maturity to now access that. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if I'll give you an example. I have, trying to keep the confidentiality, but also understand I have, a little guy, significant emotional issues, some anxiety issues. And anytime something is hard, throws a fit, has destroyed classrooms, because if you present him with something difficult, completely has destroyed the classroom. And we really had to learn, teach him that the temper tantrum and destroying the classroom isn't how we meet his needs. So we had to do two different things. Mm-hmm. We had to teach him coping skills to how to handle feeling frustrated, mm-hmm. but also making sure that we're not accidentally reinforcing that temper tantrum by giving into the temper tantrum. And so through the last year, we have really put in a lot of behavior supports to help with that behavior. A year later, this child now has pretty good coping skills, is doing great with math, but has significant reading difficulty to the point where I believe it's going to be a severe dyslexia issue. But now, because we're seeing that maturity, we're not throwing fits every time something's hard. He is now at a point where we're going to be able to introduce the accommodations for reading. We're going to be able to have those conversations about maybe other people who struggled with reading disabilities who've been very successful. You know, like you hear about Einstein.
Yeah.
Who, you know, had reading disabilities from what we hear, but did great in math. We can start having those conversations now with him and help him gain that confidence to advocate for himself now, because we've been able to work through that temper tantrum phase, that frustration, difficulty with frustration tolerance. But we had to go back. We had to provide different supports for him to work through that emotional immaturity, mm-hmm. for him to now access the supports that he needs for his disability.
I have a quick follow-up question, if you don't mind. So when you have your child evaluated for an IEP or a 504,
there's
classifications that they would fall into. Would a student who has a learning disability but presents with temper tantrums and emotional dysregulation, would they also classify under an emotional disability? Would that give them support services? Is that how you come in? Can you explain to our audience? I don't know if I'm explaining that properly.
You're explaining it great.
Yeah, because when we evaluate, for me, I want to look at the whole picture of a kid, because sometimes you have kids throwing fits and temper tantrums and you don't even realize they have learning disabilities, mm-hmm. because they're covering that up. They don't want you to know that. So every time you ask them to do something, they're clearing the classroom. And so you think, oh, this is an emotional problem. When it might be, I can't read and I don't want you to know I can't read.
Well, and they may not even understand it very well either. So, I mean, you've also got that issue as their kids.
Yes. And so when we go in and evaluate, we want to evaluate the whole picture. And so, yes, you can have a child, if I evaluate the whole picture, that has, and then we find that, they have emotional issues, but they also have learning issues. Because I always look at that with kids who have emotional mm-hmm. issues, is I also look at their learning issues to see if there's learning issues underlying it as well. And they could qualify for both services. And legally, if a kid qualifies for an IEP, no matter what they qualify for, if they also have behavior issues, mm-hmm. we're legally required to support those behavior issues through behavior plans and functional behavioral assessments to make sure we're meeting those needs as well.
Understood. Yes.
So yeah, and I think it's, and this is probably derailing the conversation. I tend to do that, so I'm sorry, but it's realizing we have to respond to that behavior first, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't respond to the behavior, then you're not going to know what the needs are always. If that makes any sense. It isn't always like, crystal clear on those things, and they still have to learn temper tantrums is not how I deal with problems.
Yes.
That is something that I did when I was a baby to get my needs met, because I wasn't self-sufficient. Now I'm more independent. I can talk, I can walk, I can express myself. I might need some support with that. I might need help with that.
Mm-hmm.
Throwing temper tantrums is not the way to do it. So we don't want them to use that mode. It's kind of an old mode of communication as they're in elementary, because it's not going to lead to anything positive for them. They've got to learn to work through that. So I don't know.
Right. No, yeah. It does help. It's clear that they've outgrown, or they should have outgrown on a maturity level, that type of coping, that way of coping. So yes, absolutely. Yes. It makes complete sense. And thank you for answering that question. I was going to ask, and maybe this is just an add-on, when we talk about the actual assessment of mm-hmm. children who need support services, how can parents and children recognize when these behaviors are maturity related? And we covered that. Or is it willful defiance? That's another thing, right? Mm-hmm. What are the red flags or any types of patterns that we can look for to identify?
And part of it, you know, to me, willful defiance is also a part of maturity. Because if you think, if you have like a 3-year-old, sometimes they're willfully defiant.
That's Lena's learning this being around her grandchildren.
I've learned it once.
Now I'm seeing this again as a grandma. Like, okay, some of this, you know, this oppositional defiance stuff, they do as toddlers.
They do as 3-year-olds, because they're trying to figure out who they are and how they're separate from their parents. And so, what is that strategy we use?
Paradoxical.
It's like a paradoxical technique. Works great with 3-year-olds. Telling a 3-year-old they can't do something that you actually want them to do, then they're going to go do it, right? Because that's...
Which is actually kind of entertaining.
That's part of the stage they're in. So sometimes willful defiance is a maturity issue. And I think you're quite... Okay, you might have to ask your question one more time, because I think it has to do with
We were just looking for
some of the... issue. Is it maturity or willful defiance issue?
Mm-hmm. Right. It is right. And how do you tweeze those things out? How do you know, okay, this is a disability versus this is maturity?
Now, if I have a kid that maybe it really is, academics are hard, and so I'm getting a little defiant, I'm shutting down. If they're mature and you have that discussion with them and you help them recognize it, they'll stop the willful defiance.
Mm-hmm.
If they're mature and they're like, okay, somebody finally understands me, this is what's going on, mm-hmm. they'll take advantage of the accommodations that are put in place. If they're not mature, they're not necessarily going to take advantage of those accommodations. Either that, or for some kids, if they're severely disabled, if you have kids who have language, like they're nonverbal, mm-hmm. those kind of things, they might need more accommodations and more support. And so you're constantly working as a school team, because you want the parents to be very honest with their input with the school. You want the school to be very honest, so that we can really tease that out. Is this a child that needs more accommodations? Maybe we're not giving enough accommodations. We don't want to overly accommodate, because we want kids to grow as much as possible. But are they really, for because of their disability, needing more accommodations to help with that maturity and growth? Or is this a behavior issue and all of us need to get on the same page?
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, if one adult's holding them accountable, another adult's feeling sorry for them because of their disability, then they're not holding them accountable. That's very confusing for the child. And we're not seeing the maturity happen.
Well, and then you can start having undermining happening. Okay. So maybe you put a plan in place as a school team, and you've got one person who feels sorry for the child, who's kind of undermining everybody else. And that could be anybody. That could be a teacher, a parent, administrator, anyone. And then that plan really falls apart, and you don't see those kids mature like they need to, because they're getting out of some of the accountability they need to grow up. So one of the things that Lena and I was trained by attachment therapists in Evergreen, Colorado, and they use Eric Erickson's stages quite a bit. And when you're dealing with kids with attachment issues, they had a trauma, or they call like a break in their attachment those first 2 years. And that can be abuse. It can even be adoption for some kids, depending on their temperament. Mm-hmm. It can be, you know, in utero drug use. It can be domestic violence. It can be severe medical. It can be all kinds of things where there was a trauma that happened early. And then it can erode their trust of the world. And so when Lena and I, we had a program for kids with emotional disturbance, they were labeled that on their IEP at our school. And so we took all of their health histories. We took Eric Erickson's stages to see like the behaviors we were seeing and seeing like, okay, what stage would this be? And did they have a trauma like in those first 2 years? All of them did. Mm. All of them had a trauma. And all of them had behaviors that would have been at that stage where that trauma happened. And so what that told us is that really impacts maturity. And then what can happen is if the adults are allowing the behavior, if we don't have a good behavior plan in place where there's some accountability around that behavior, they're not maturing out of it like they need to. And so this is a very complicated discussion, but what we ended up doing is putting the supports in place. We put in some accountability. There was also a lot of teaching. There was a lot of emotional support given with groups and counseling. We saw some kids where they were completely unmanageable, even in the hospitals, grow into the point they graduated out of special ed. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just an important concept for us to realize that trauma and entitlement can get in the way of emotional development and maturity. And that can be some of the behavior you're seeing. Sometimes it's a diagnosis too. Like Sometimes they are battling depression and anxiety or ADHD or other issues. And so sometimes it's both. So it's one of those things, like Lena said, where we have to work as a team together to really figure out what it is that they need, get those boundaries in place, that support in place. And then you kind of see, okay, they're doing okay. They're able to meet the demands. I think when you're looking at maturity, are they meeting the demands that are placed on them in the classroom and at home, right? Even special ed kids have to meet the demands that are placed on them that are within their ability.
So with the accommodation and support, mm-hmm. we still want to meet those demands.
We want to see them meeting those demands. Like as we call it problem ownership, right? We all have responsibilities to their education. The educators do, the parents do, and the child does. And kids who are maturing like you want to see are meeting those demands. Because kids, honestly, they love to learn. They really do. So if they're not doing that, then we've got to stop and look at why. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
And let's talk about what that looks like in the classroom or even at home, meeting those expectations. What does it look like? I guess it differs depending on each child's progress and mm-hmm. IEP mm-hmm. and 504. But what are some of the biggest like things that parents, educators, and teaching teams can look for that, you know, my audience can use to identify at home?
Okay. I'm trying because it's such a big question, because when you think of the kids that we work with, they range from kids who have intellectual disabilities who don't even have verbal skills, right? Mm-hmm. To kids who intellectually maybe are very, very bright that have disabilities. So it's such a huge range. I think for parents, what you really want to be thinking about, one, is you want to think about the age of your child. You want to be thinking about developmentally and emotionally, where should they be at this age? Like kind of recognize where that is.
Where the typical is.
Where the typical.
Where is typical? Because if you don't know typical, you don't even know
what you're working for. And then it's figuring out what structure and support can I put in place to help them get there. So if I have a child, maybe we can go back to the temper tantrum. Let's say I have a child who throws a temper tantrum every time I ask them to do something. Maybe emotionally they're like a 2-year-old. Right? So maybe mm-hmm. they're a 10-year-old, but emotionally they're like a 2-year-old. And that's when you really need to think about what level of freedom and structure do they need? So for us in the schools, what we do often is we look at, if I have a kid who's emotionally like a 2-year-old, I have to think about if a parent brought in their 2-year-old into a school building, what level of supervision, structure, and support would that 2-year-old need to mature? So I wouldn't let a 2-year-old out at recess without any supervision. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be sending a 2-year-old to walk up and down the hall to go to the restroom without supervision. They don't mm-hmm. have the maturity to handle that. So part of it is asking yourself, where is my child at with their maturity? And then I need to put that kind of structure in place for them. So some of the things that we'll do with kids is we do like structured recesses. Maybe they can't handle the same level of freedom as their peers outside at recess. Mm-hmm. So we have to structure that recess, whether it's, you know, I have had some kids who the minute they're outside, they hurt somebody. They're not even ready to be outside. So maybe we have an area inside with supervision where they're playing with tasks. They're learning how to manage themselves inside. Other kids, they can manage outside, but they need to be in with ears and eyes always with an adult. Or maybe they have certain areas of the playground they play on. Or in the school setting, I have to think about, maybe I have to structure where they sit, where they line up. Mm-hmm. I have to have supervision for them. They can't just leave the classroom. I have to really think about what level of structure and support do they need, because then I provide that for them. And then with consistency and accountability, they start to mature, and then I can start to give them more freedom and less mm-hmm. structure to get them where they need to be. Mm-hmm. So you can do the same thing in the home setting, like asking yourself, where is my child at emotionally, maybe cognitively as well, if they have low cognitive abilities and disabilities, and where do I want them to be? But what structure and support do I need to put in place? Like, so Tracy and I, we call it the 5-minute reset or 5-minute plan. And it's a structured timeout that uses all of our components of the healing environment that we can put in place. And so we'll talk about that too, but we have that to really work through those temper tantrums. And that can be used with kids. I've used it with kids as young as preschool age to help them work mm-hmm. through that. I've used it with kids in our extended resource room with cognitive delays as well. And we modify it a little bit. Maybe we don't take 5 minutes. Maybe it's three.
3 minutes. Yeah. It's kind of like the time isn't as important
as them learning to emotionally.
Is that them learning to do some of that on their own? They're developing that skill. Yeah.
And so if I was a parent, I would really be looking at the environment that we have at home. Do I need to structure this environment more so that I would with a child that's younger, to provide that level of support, make sure I'm consistently holding them accountable. I have consistent consequences, not with anger or shame. I'm not yelling or screaming. I'm keeping my cool, but I have consistent consequences so they can learn cause and effect thinking. But I might have to give them less freedom, even if they're older.
Mm-hmm. But, and it's showing. So what we look at, and we took some of this idea from Terry Levy and Michael Orleans, who are attachment therapists in Evergreen, Colorado. And they call it the autonomy circle. Mm-hmm. And how it is it's like a spiral is how it is. And the baby is at the center of that, right? They have tons of support, tons of boundaries because they can't do anything on their own. And as they show they have knowledge, skills, self-control, and judgment, those boundaries move out, which means there is more freedom. So with freedom also comes responsibility. Right. And they can manage those responsibilities. They can manage that freedom. They're ready. So kids, like if we have kids on the playground, this could be a special ed kid, or this could be a 504 kid, or this could be a gen ed kid. And they are chronically hitting kids, hurting kids, yelling at kids, not following adult directions. Right. We've tried all of our tricks. Nothing is working. Then they might be on a structured recess plan. And that may be where they're on the blacktop for a while. That's where they get to play because there's more adult supervision and we can manage their behavior more. And what we tell the kids is, look, when we can trust that you can go out on the playground, you're not going to hurt anybody, you're following adult directions, that tells us you're ready to have more freedom. We can try that at some recesses once we see that you're consistently able to manage the blacktop. That tells us you're ready. So we have these conversations with the kids so that they understand what it is we're needing to see for them to have more freedom. Mm-hmm. And there's not any shame involved because we understand this is a maturity issue. This is them growing up. And we know that eventually they're going to get there. And we want them to get there. And we want to have a good relationship with them in the process. So that's kind of what that looks like on the school setting. Mm-hmm. And parents can do that at home. It's like they're not managing video games very well. They're not managing following adult directions. So that may be that they don't have access to video games or some of those things until you see that they can manage it. They can have some of those privileges and they can be respectful and appropriate. The majority of the time, they're still kids. So they're not going to be perfect. We're not looking for that. We're looking for them to take some responsibility and ownership for when they make a mistake. So I don't know if that clarifies that a little bit.
It does. At the end of the day, it's all about growth. It's going through those stages, right? And supporting those stages and milestones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we find that by structuring their environment, they're not getting in trouble all the time. Because if you just give them the same freedom as ever, like if they're 10, but acting like a 2-year-old and you give them the same freedom as a 10-year-old, they're getting in trouble all the time. Parents are getting called all the time. They're getting disciplined all the time. But if we structure their world to a place where they can manage it. They're not getting in trouble all the time. We can teach them appropriate skills and slowly give them what they need.
Well, we're kind of handing their issues to back to them, which is what we always want to be doing. I can't control them. I mean, it'd be nice sometimes. I mean, I don't really want to control them, but you know what I'm saying? Like, they have to learn to control themselves. And that is a process that all of us have had to go through.
Yes.
Every single one of us have had to go through that process, and we're still growing up. Even as adults, we're maturing. And so we want to hand their issues back to them, mm-hmm. and let them figure it out with a lot of caringness, empathy, and support. But those boundaries are firm. They kind of call it the steel box with a velvet lining. Mm-hmm. That's what we want, so that they start to have that growth. And we want to be a team on that, because if we have one person letting them out of that steel box, it's like it didn't even exist.
Like the boundary didn't happen.
The boundary never happened. And so it's really important that all of the adults come together and figure out where those boundaries need to go with the kids. And we're not going to always agree. That is the reality. We all have our own issues or histories or personalities and ideas and experiences with that child. But that's where Lena and I have found where if we can come together, mm-hmm. we can do what's in the best interest. And you see growth all the time. And it's so fun.
Yeah. So fun. And again, that can be like, when we teach our educators, like that structure for some kids, maybe they just need a little bit of structure. And for other kids, they need a lot. So some of our kids like that have a lot of cognitive delays, maybe they're nonverbal and they have lots of behaviors. They might be in a classroom with more adults. Mm-hmm. So there's less kids, more adults. They're doing more direct teaching. They have an adult with them to kind of keep them where they need to be. And then as they mature and they're not running away from the classroom anymore, mm-hmm. as they're learning how to communicate a little bit, then they end up getting a little bit more freedom. Mm-hmm. So like in my extended resource room, we have, you know, a child that used to not have a lot of freedom, but now can go to all the recesses with his peers on his own, but then still has the academic support in extended resource room. But that was because we had to pull it all in, reteach, work on it, and slowly give him that freedom.
Yeah. And that's what we want, right? Mm-hmm. We ultimately want kids out of the playground, having fun with their friends and being appropriate, knowing there might be some discipline here and there, but they're able to manage.
Right.
That is what we want. So we're always working towards that. But some kids can be in and on again, off again, recess plans for a long time. Mm-hmm. It could be a couple of years for mm-hmm. some until they work it out, until they see like, okay, this isn't going anywhere. I have to work on it. Yeah. I have to take some, we want them to take some of that responsibility of their own behavior, not of anybody else's, just themselves.
Mm-hmm. And that leads me to my final question for you both.
Yeah.
And it's about what you look forward to, like what gives you hope, because you've been working with children with severe emotional and behavioral difficulties for quite some time. So what have you learned about their capacity to heal and mature and when they're given the right support, all of the examples that you've just provided?
To me, that's amazing. Like, I truly believe kids can heal and mature. And mm-hmm. because I believe that, and like, that's kind of the biggest thing that keeps us going, because we do see it. And you have to celebrate your wins. And sometimes you have to work with a team to be like, okay, this kid used to be physically assaulting us every day. He might still be throwing temper tantrums, but he's staying in his desk and not physically assaulting us. That's growth, right? Mm-hmm. But it's that I have watched kids, and we've seen kids go from needing full-time special education services to actually graduating without an IEP. We've watched kids, this year alone, I've watched kids who are throwing temper tantrum 8 hours a day, who have gone weeks without throwing a temper tantrum. And then I've watched, like I said, the one kid who we couldn't even talk to him about his disabilities. Now we can talk to him about his disabilities. Those are the things that give you hope. And I do have an inherent belief that kids can mature, they can grow. And yes, for some kids with special needs, there might be some limited capacities for some of those kids, but we never want to limit it more than we need to. We want them to be able to soar as far as they possibly can.
That's right. Well, and we know, I think for Lena and I, we've watched all these kids make all these amazing growth. That doesn't mean it's perfect. It doesn't mean that every single kid makes growth either. Like, you can have amazing parents, amazing educators, and have kids who still really struggle. So I don't want people to get this unrealistic idea about things or start shaming themselves if they're really struggling with the child, because we know how hard that is. Mm-hmm. But we do see kids make growth. And I think Lena and I always feel like there is a solution. We may not know what it is yet, but we keep working at it. Eventually we're going to figure it out. And I think we just love what we do. We love mental health and we love seeing that growth.
Mm-hmm. And we love problem solving with teams, with mm-hmm. teachers.
With teachers and parents and working together and finding a way.
How do people find you? What do you have, a website or any type mm-hmm. of resource for people to learn more?
Absolutely. So we have our website, which is www.healingchildren.com. And we have online courses for educators where they could get credit through NNU. They could also get CEUs if they don't want to pay for credit. And we are going to have a webinar series for parents and educators together, which Great. Will be with us. We also have some people helping with middle school. And then we have an addiction specialist to help parents understand, like, when are they seeing a kid kind of dabbling into substance use and what can be done? How can they deal with it? And then dealing with the college age.
We also do parent coaching. Mm-hmm. So if there's parents who just want some coaching on how to handle some things, mm-hmm. we do that as well too. We do have parents who take our classes, even though they're geared toward educators. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of educators who take those classes and then use those strategies at home as well too. Yeah. So maybe they're not, we eventually will have parent classes on there too, but parents can take those as well too.
Amazing. You're doing a wonderful job to support parents and educators. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us and to discuss maturity and special ed. And hopefully you can come back on and we can talk about other topics.
Oh, that'd be awesome. We'd love that.
Yes.
Be great.
Thank you so much.